In 1915, Boston was ground zero in a fiery national debate over censorship, artistic freedom, racism, and a nascent civil rights movement.
At the center of this story were two men who couldn't have been more different. One was Monroe Trotter, a black Harvard-educated newspaper editor and civil rights advocate who was the son of a black Civil War Union officer.
The other was D.W. Griffith, the white son of a Confederate officer and a brilliant filmmaker. His popular but hugely controversial film was The Birth of a Nation, a sweeping story about the Civil War and Reconstruction, which depicted freed slaves as reckless villains and knights of the Ku Klux Klan as heroic protectors of American values.
Monroe Trotter pushed hard to have the film censored here in Boston and across the country. D.W. Griffith pushed back in the name of artistic freedom.
BU journalism professor Dick Lehr tells this fascinating story in his new book, The Birth of a Nation, How a Legendary Filmmaker and a Crusading Editor Reignited America's Civil War. And Dick Lehr, thank you for coming in, and thank you for this really, really fascinating book.
Hi, Anthony. Good to be with you.
So tell me first about Boston's Monroe Trotter and where he fits in the struggle for civil rights in America in the early 20th century.
Well, Monroe Trotter was, in the early 1900s, one of the most prominent national civil rights figures in America. I think he's been largely forgotten. But if you go back in time, as I did when I researched this book, I realized that he was often and usually mentioned in the same breath as Booker T. Washington, who was the dominant voice of the time, and W.E.B. Du Bois. In fact, Trotter rose to prominence when he founded a newspaper called The Guardian in 1901.
Here in Boston, right?
Here in Boston.
Yep.
The goal of his paper was to take on Booker T. Washington and his then-dominant approach to civil rights, which was conciliatory, compromising. And Trotter was, in many respects, way ahead of his time because he was saying, man, this isn't working.
We've got to be more confrontational.
Confrontational, yeah. Direct. It's about higher education. And we have to challenge the white man and his dominance in American society.
As we mentioned, he was the son of a black Union officer in the Civil War. He couldn't have been more different than the other protagonist in your story, the famous filmmaker D.W. Griffith. Tell us what we need to know about D.W. Griffith.
Well, he grew up in Kentucky. His father died when he was a relatively young boy, but not before he had learned from his father, who was a Civil War hero. His nickname was Roaring Jack, and he was a hard-drinking raconteur post-war. And young D.W. Griffith learned a lot about the South, the so-called Lost Cause, and the Civil War through the storytelling of his father in the evenings. And you had these very neat parallels going on. Griffith growing up in the South, the son of a Civil War hero. Trotter growing up in Boston, whose father also was a Civil War soldier.
So interesting. So D.W. Griffith, of course, we remember him today for this movie, The Birth of a Nation. Back then, it was a sensation, revolutionary in its length, its technique, depictions of battles. People had never seen a film like this before. But it was hugely controversial by today's standards, and because it was radically and overtly racist, right?
It was indeed. And its portrayal of blacks is certainly in any modern perspective racist and deeply offensive. The black men are mostly in blackface, are portrayed as sort of predators. Their goal in life is to get a white woman. You know, freed slaves in these Reconstruction scenes are simply illustrated as being way over their heads and not smart enough, not civilized enough to have won the right to vote and to be free.
Also, the film depicts the rise of the Ku Klux Klan as a kind of valiant group of protectors of the sanctity of the American way of life.
Indeed. Right? I mean, the second half of the film, which is set mostly in Reconstruction, dramatizes the Northern Republican carpetbaggers and their cohorts, the freed slaves, as just bringing chaos and craziness to the New South. And it's the Klan that rises up to defend the old values and to push back.
So how was this film received across the nation when it came out?
It was wildly successful. It was an instant hit by every measure of the time. And they were charging the unheard of price of $2 a ticket. These are responses, I must say, by largely white audiences. It was such a breakthrough moment in early film history. You know, looking back, it's hard to imagine, but audiences were cheering, were weeping, were on their feet at some of the Klan scenes and the battle scenes that Griffith had pulled off.
But technically, I mean, putting the story aside for the moment, which I know is difficult, technically it was cutting edge, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, the fade in, the close up, he would shoot battle scenes and chase scenes from multiple angles and cutting between the angles to enhance the drama and the emotion. That was all groundbreaking and new.
But of course, it had this really troubling bit of content. And I was struck by your description of how this film was received by President Woodrow Wilson, who had a private screening of it at the White House.
Yeah, the movie's based on a very popular novel at the time called The Klansman by Thomas Dixon. And Dixon had a personal relationship with Wilson and managed in early February to arrange for the first ever screening inside the White House. And that kicked off the movie because Wilson and the private party that saw it, that includes some of the major power brokers in the nation's capital, all loved it.
So Monroe Trotter, obviously as a civil rights advocate, has a huge problem with this film. But tell me first about his relationship with President Wilson, because at a certain point you describe him going toe-to-toe with Wilson in the White House over the way black federal employees are treated in the Wilson administration.
Wilson has a very key role in it because of his connection to both major figures. And it also is a story that shines a light on Wilson's racism. And I think that gets largely overshadowed in his legacy as a leader during World War I, the League of Nations, his economic progressivism. Well, the fact of the matter is he was pretty racist himself. Nothing says it better than what you were just alluding to, is this juxtaposition between Wilson's encounter first with Trotter, who came to Washington at the end of 1914 to protest the Jim Crowing in federal government, the segregation of federal agencies. Wilson considered him impolite and in effect too uppity. He threw him out of the White House.
Yeah.
Now, fast forward like 6 weeks, and Wilson is hosting D.W. Griffith and Thomas Dixon for this first ever screening of this movie that he applauded in the White House.
You have a great quote where Trotter actually says to Wilson, "Only 2 years ago you were heralded as perhaps the second Lincoln, and now the Afro-American leaders who supported you are hounded as false leaders and traitors to their race." And Wilson had a real hard time with that.
Yeah, he was not used to a black man standing toe-to-toe, looking him in the eye, and challenging him in this way.
So Monroe Trotter, of course, takes on D.W. Griffith and his film, The Birth of a Nation. He essentially wanted to get it banned, right?
Yeah, that's what's so interesting, because Trotter's a newspaper guy.
Yeah.
Here he is trying to censor something.
First Amendment guy. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so what is that all about? And it really requires going back and understanding as best we can the time and the place. I mean, we're talking about Boston. There's all these great characters in the story. James Michael Curley, who was a famous censor.
Then the mayor of Boston.
Then the mayor of Boston. And he was known for his barefoot ban on the city, in the city's stage plays. It requires a bit of time traveling and realizing that back then, the First Amendment was an earlier, more primitive, and less robust version that we take for granted today. Censorship was more commonplace widely, and it was seen as a more go-to tool in the toolbox for someone like Trotter. I was frankly happy to find that Trotter and Du Bois, who was also got on board with the protests against the movie, were not comfortable with this sort of technique, and they would have preferred to fight a film with a film. Respond to speech with speech. And indeed, the NAACP was exploring that, but they couldn't come up with the financing.
So in a big way, this battle between Monroe Trotter and D.W. Griffith comes to a head at Boston City Hall in April 1915, over calls to have the film censored. And it's actually the first time Griffith and Trotter are in the same room together. Tell us what happens.
There's a hearing that's initiated by Trotter and the local chapter of the NAACP, this dramatic face-off between Trotter and Griffith for the first time. Trotter saying, "You got to run this out of town." And Griffith's putting up the First Amendment. Now, this, first of all, he doesn't agree that this is offensive. And secondly, he says it's about free speech. And this goes on for 3 months in every possible venue. And as I was researching it, especially when Trotter leads a protest on the theater and there's hundreds of police out there, I keep scratching my head. I'm going, what year is this?
Yeah.
Because it's 1915, but it's so 1960-ish. Trotter, at one point, is at the forefront of a march involving 4,000 blacks on the State House, drawing attention to this movie.
It's amazing. Well, what's the impact of all this on the civil rights movement that developed later in the century?
There's a scholar and civil rights historian by the name of Lerone Bennett who basically said Trotter threw the first stone of the modern civil rights movement.
Wow. So how did the confrontation in Boston play out? Was the film run out of town or was it shown?
So at the end of the day, after this protracted and dramatic battle, Griffith prevailed in every venue, and the film played in Boston from the spring and well into the fall.
You know, Dick, one of the things that I'm really puzzled by, and you talk a little bit about this, I think, in the introduction, Trotter is a well-known name in Boston. We've got a public school named after Monroe Trotter, but I don't think many people know who Monroe Trotter was. Why has he sort of been forgotten by history in
Boston? My own experience with him, I think, reflects that, is that I got into this story largely through Trotter when about 6 years ago I was reading an article that made a reference to him. But I started reading about Trotter and realized newspaper editor, crusading civil rights leader, Harvard's first Black Phi Beta Kappa in 1895. And I'm going, I really should know more about this guy. What happened? Why is he forgotten? I think because he was overtaken by the NAACP in terms of his civil rights legacy. I can't overstate how well known and prominent he was in the early 1900s. But this protest in 1915 was pretty much the apex and the peak of his career. He was also not an organization man. He was really a cult of personality. And then you had the rise of the NAACP, which he shared a lot of the goals. But he was not an institutional guy. And in fact, he would not join the NAACP because they were run in the beginning by white folks. And he felt that an organization advancing the rights of Black America should be run by Black Americans. Hmm. So he had a fundamental, difference with the founders of the NAACP.
Meanwhile, D.W. Griffith and his film The Birth of a Nation remains a sort of staple of any college film class. I know that's where I first learned about it.
Because it is a breakthrough moment in American film history. It was the Star Wars of its time.
Yeah.
The equivalent, I think, is like the digital revolution in our time. The impact of this three-hour epic feature film, it's hard to overstate. I mean, people were just in awe of the power of this new medium.
Wow. Interesting. What a great story. Dick Lehr is a professor of journalism at Boston University and a former investigative reporter for the Boston Globe. His latest book is The Birth of a Nation, How a Legendary Filmmaker and a Crusading Editor Reignited America's Civil War. And he'll be discussing the book tonight at Harvard Bookstore. Dick, thanks so much for coming in.
You're welcome, Anthony.
Stay with us. Coming up, we'll talk with a father of two school-aged boys living in Vermont who have never set foot in a classroom. Instead, they are unschooled. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.